You can hear our show on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, or Palm phones. On demand and on the go. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com or in the app stores. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. You're watching Fanboy Versus with your hosts, J.D. Church, Nicole Hale, Chris Triplett, and Chris McFeely.
And you are watching Fanboy Versus. I am your host, J.D., joined this week by Chris Triplett, Nicole Hale, and Chris McFeely. Welcome, team.
Hello.
Hello. Yeah.
Is Fanboy Versus the sinking ship, as it's 100 years ago today that the Titanic took a trip to the bottom of the ocean.
It is! Too bad we ain't got no comics that have the Titanic.
Nothing related to the Titanic.
Oh, I'm sure there must be.
Oh, God.
There has to be an amazing Spidey plan where, like, you know, maybe Spidey has to, like, stop the Titanic from sinking or something. You know?
Where he just
webs up a hole, you know, with the, like, super webbing, you know, that they don't see.
Travels
maybe
through
Doctor,
time.
The Doctor Who comic has something like that.
There must be an issue of Marvel Team Up where he did that. Like, got caught in a time travel experiment with Black Goliath and went back in time to the Titanic.
It's like Doctor Doom actually was the one that tried to sink the Titanic, and that's why they had to travel back, because it wasn't supposed to happen.
Well, you can tell that's a pre 9/11 comic.
There was a chest containing magical gems in its hold.
No, that's
he had to sink the ship to claim without anybody noticing.
No, he had to trick the Thane into being Blackbeard the Pirate.
That wouldn't work now, though, because, see, in the post 9/11, you know, Doctor Doom would have saved the Titanic. He would have been down there rescuing the people, as he did in Amazing Spider-Man 36. Anyway!
Kill a bunch of folks in many stories after that.
Yeah. But that, for some reason, that particular thing caused
Doom just
Doctor
had
Doom.
Some dust in Doom's eyes.
So, C2E2 happened this weekend, which means tons of news that we've been dying for since we haven't had any for, like, the last couple
weeks.
Yeah,
there ain't been much.
So, Chris McFeely.
Okay, I'm going to run down. Let's see. So, Dark Horse.
Back and relax.
Now, none of us read Buffy, but Dark Horse have announced...
I did read
Buffy? Oh, okay, I didn't realize.
That wasn't Buffy.
That wasn't a slam on Buffy. I just didn't realize you read it because you never talk about it. You should talk about it sometime. You didn't talk about that big dramatic issue like from like last month.
It's because it doesn't matter after reading this issue.
Yeah, I know. She's a robot in the newest issue, but it doesn't matter.
Well, I thought you meant like the whole pregnancy thing was the big thing.
That's what I meant. Like that was got a lot of press. Like
in the next issue, she was a robot, and then there was this issue, and I'm like, what the hell's going on with this comic?
I'm now asking that question.
Well, Buffy thought she was pregnant, and there was a big emotional, heartfelt issue about whether she thought she should have an abortion, about whether she as a person is allowed to have a normal life. And she talks with various other, you know, people with the son of a slayer, you know, and ask her if he resents his mother for life, and they make a really great 22-page drama out of it, you know. And in the next issue, it turns out she's a robot.
What?
Wow.
Wow, that was a spoiler.
This week's issue established that she had, as a sort of witness protection thing, Buffy has been replaced with a robot.
I can't defend it. That's why I don't want to talk. That's why I even mentioned that a robot
this week. Is this a thing that happens in the Buffy universe now? Like... I mean,
there is a free storyline in which there was a Buffy robot, so this kind of makes sense.
Is this like a Doom bot? I mean, is this like a...
There's this guy who makes robots, and it happened in the TV show a couple of times.
Is this like the... Oh, it happened in the... Okay. Is this sort of like the Nick Fury, like, replicant thing?
Yeah, it's kind of like an LMD. I mean, he was originally like a villainous character who just made himself a robot girlfriend, but...
Yeah.
What's wrong with that?
Nothing wrong at all. You just turned into a villain later.
Oh, okay. I was going to say. It's like...
Anyway, so they're doing some Buffy spin-offs. There's going to be a Willow miniseries, and there's going to be a Spike miniseries. And the plot
Willow,
seems to be...
really? Ugh.
Well, there's already an Angel in Faith comic written by... Help me out here. You know who
Crystal
is. It's somebody
Gidge,
big.
Yeah. Crystal's Gidge. Right, Crystal's well, Gidge is writing Angel in Faith.
I think it's like not selling worth a damn, because I never see it in any comic shops.
I don't know. I have no list to judge. I order it, so I know I see it in shops. Yeah, well, no. Let's see if they have any writers credited for this thing.
Who? Peter David. Peter David's some good books.
Hang on, I'm going to have to make a click over to another article to just see if they've actually. Oh, yes, Victor Gishler, who wrote the X-Men and the Vamp the Curse of the Mutants vampire story on the X-Men, will be writing the Spike miniseries. And oh my God, Willow's going to be written by Jeff Parker. Wow, there's a couple of good writers in these.
Wow.
Maybe you check that out.
Not that I'm that bothered, because, you know, I'm not that bothered, but there's some good writers on there. And Willow is one of those characters that they, you know, sort of, they feel like they need to do stuff with, but...
like I said, I was never a fan of Willow.
She's not in the comic anymore. She left the comic. Yeah. That's probably why they're doing a mini.
Yeah, they
it's like her own, it's like, this is Willow's story now. You know?
They need to do something, but... let's see, what's going on? IDW have announced there's going to be a Danger Girl G.I. Joe crossover miniseries.
Oh my God.
Wow.
I know, what the hell.
G.I. Joe, yes, Danger Girl.
You won't be able to tell apart, like, you know, her villains will look just like the Cobra villains, so you won't be able to tell
them. Well, that's certainly happening.
Okay, well, that's great.
Yeah, they're doing a Battle Beasts miniseries as well.
I did hear about that.
That's also weird.
There's toys are back, too. They're, like, doing something with that.
Yeah.
When did people start caring about Beast Machine? Battle Beasts?
I don't know.
I vaguely remember them. I know that they exist.
Did they ever care?
Yeah.
I mean,
you know, well, that's what I'm saying. I'm a bit puzzled that the surge of interest there seems to have been. Not that I'm knocking Battle Beasts.
No.
Well, if it was the property of the 80s and they got, you know, that was one of the last few things that they haven't rebooted or remade or redone,
but doesn't,
so of course they're going to do it.
Doesn't Botshots, I mean, don't Botshots really cut out?
Of that era, no,
yeah, Botshots are basically...
They basically answer that need, you know, and they actually transform and stuff, so I don't
Fever Dream or something, or was Battle Beast in, like, some Japanese episode of Transformers?
It was in an episode of Master Force, wasn't
Headmaster.
Thank goodness.
Yeah.
Somebody else saw it.
They were part of the Transformers toy line in Japan.
Yeah.
Transformers. But, yeah, that happened, so that's happening again. I mean, Diamond are bringing Battle Beasts back as these little Mini-Mate-style figures sometime soon, so I guess this is to tie in with that? I don't know. It's odd.
Yeah.
Is anybody
Let's see. DC are adding some new digital comics to their increasingly sizable digital lineup now, because we've got this is digital first, I should say, because we've got the Smallville series, season 11, that's going to be coming up soon.
That came out this week.
Did it come out this week?
Yeah, no, it did. I didn't get to read it, but it did come out this week, so I may
just
talk about it next week.
Much I care.
Batman Beyond is one of them.
Yes, Batman Beyond is another, and I feel like there's one more. But Arkham Unhinged, who got that? Nicole, you get that this week?
I got
it. Yes, that's a digital first series that's being collected now as well. So the two series that are being added to that lineup are the questionable Ame Kame Girls. is a series based on those rather dreadful little manga style statues of the DC heroines that any visitor to a comic shop is sure to have seen decorating the wall and gathering dust. I've never, you know the thing about those statues is I would get them, not buy them, but I would comprehend them if they were actually, like, done by Japanese designers and sculptors. But, like, they're not. You just... No. Well, I mean, I have no proof for this, but, like, I just, you just have to look at them, and you have to look at the art on their package. Like, the art on the package is not real manga art. That's drawn by some white gentleman who has felt he can copy something he downloaded scans of off the internet, you know. And the figures themselves are such incredible cliche. But then you look at Marvel's, like, line of Bishoujo statues from Kotobukiya, the Don Scarlet Witch, Miss Marvel, Psylocke, Rogue, you know, those are real Japanese-looking things with, you know, and amazingly more conservative. But anyway, that's a thing that's happening. It's going to be written by Jimmy Palmiotti and Justin Gray, and it's going to start off as a bunch of short solo stories, and then it's going to lead into a team-up where they all fight Brainiac. But it is going to have art by Amanda Connor on the one.
So is Brainiac going to be a girl that looks like an anime girl, too?
God. You know? I mean, I know Amanda Connor is...
He'll have lots of tentacles!
Oh God. You know, but I mean, on one sense, it's kind of like, okay, I get Amanda Connor's doing some art for this, cool, whatever, but it just kind of seems to cater to the lowest denominator. I mean, is this of any value other than for poor, lonely guys to masturbate to? I mean...
Keep making the statues.
Right, and that's what I mean. It's like, isn't that what the statues are for? I mean, really? Like, who would buy these things?
It seems like this. They know it's not going to sell as a print, so they're like, yeah, put it out
digital.
Well,
I would say we can probably expect this to be collected later, the way Arkham Unhinged and Smallville are being done. Yeah. But, that aside, there's going to be shorts. Wonder Woman with art by Amanda Connor, Batgirl by Sanford Green, Duella Dent by Ted Naife, Power Girl by Mike Bowden, and Supergirl by Santi Casas. More interestingly, the other digital announcement DC's made is for a Batman series. It's just called Batman. They haven't given it a subtitle yet, but it's just out of continuity stories. They're not worrying about it. It's just Batman stories. But it's going to include, like, work by Damon Lindelof, and Jeff Lemire, and J.G. Jones, and Nicholas Scott, and Ryan Sook, and Ben Temple-Smith, and Steve Niles, and Trevor Harrison, and Joe Harris, and Jeff Parker, and Gabriel Hardman, and Phil Hester, and Chris Sprouse.
So what you're telling me is that you're telling me that Batman's going to wind up underground, pushing a button, fighting zombies and vampires in Alaska, is what you're saying, right?
Well... Perhaps if these people were all writing one big story, but these will presumably these guys will just be writing like 1 10-page story a piece, and that's be as simple as that, and then they'll be collected in pairs for print. But that's a pretty impressive collection of creators, you know, so that's cool. DC also say that they'll be doing like some massive advertising for before Watchmen, like maybe television advertising again.
Mm.
We'll see about that. Over at Marvel, they're also riding the advertising bandwagon in that the news of this historic wedding coming up in the pages of Astonishing X-Men will...
Oh, I thought you were talking about the My Little Pony wedding coming up next week.
No.
Pages of Astonishing X-Men, which is going to be... all over. Apparently, it will be broken via a major news outlet. Now, the reason that this seems to be deserving of this amount of press is that, by all indications, it's going to be a gay wedding.
Oh,
what yes. Characters to get married? I haven't even heard about this.
Well, okay, here you go. Marvel Universe. Gay man.
I don't care. I don't read it.
Guess. No, take one wild guess.
Oh, let's see. It's what? North Star and somebody else, right?
Hey!
North Star was on the X-Men. Just saying, because North Star was on the X-Men.
Yeah. Well, guess who just joined the cast of Astonishing X-Men?
Wow.
Yes. speculation would be that he's proposing to his boyfriend from Greg Pak and... because he's in the series as well.
Oh, okay.
So it's not just a gay marriage; it's an interracial gay marriage.
Well, that's cute.
It's cute, but Archie beat them to the punch already.
Yeah, well. Yeah, side joke about Marvel though. Earlier in the week, I saw a Tom Brevoort joke on Twitter that he almost walked into the wrong offices this week because so much of the DC personnel is old Marvel people.
Yeah, I keep saying that. he's definitely working his late 1990s Marvel Rolodex to staff these books. Horrid Mackey on Ravagers, the book and creator nobody was asking for. what else is happening? Okay, Ultimate Spider-Man. Looks like it's on to God going to be 616 Peter Parker and Miles Morales.
Wow.
Now, Jack? Has the Ultimate Universe ever crossed over with the 616?
Nope. Or directly. Marvel Zombies has been avoided.
Well, but Marvel Zombies is a whole different thing.
No, but it happened. I mean, the Ultimate Universe, they teased a crossover. It was back in the late 20s of Ultimate Fantastic Four, maybe the early 20s. Seemed like
Ultimate FF had met the real FF. Made
contact with the real universe, but then it turned out zombies. And then the real zombies made their way into the universe afterwards. So there's
they need to do this again, and it turns out this time it's a Marvel Zombie Ultimate
Universe. You know, but I thought Marvel was trying to, you know, distance itself from this sort of multi, you know, universe sort of multiverse thing. I mean, I thought their whole thing with this Ultimate Universe is it was supposed to be a universe that completely stood on its own. I mean, doesn't this sort of
they have said that? I mean, certainly, internet pundits all over the world are racing back years and years to pull up Joe Quesada's old quote where he said that if there was ever a crossover, it would mean that Marvel was officially out of ideas. Oh, ho, ho, ho. So much mirth derived from that. It's Spider-Man's 50th anniversary. I think if you were going to celebrate it with something, this doesn't sound like a bad idea.
No, yeah. I don't want to be a downer Debbie about it. I'm just kind of, it does kind of draw that question of, is this going to open the door for other crossovers, or is this something that they're going to really try to keep, isolated?
I hope we never see it again, honestly. I mean, I don't think we need any more of it.
Yeah,
is fine.
It sounds like the Ultimate Universe is going to be busy itself enough this year, because Ultimate Captain America is coming back later this year. He's been out of it since Spidey died. And there's going to be some kind of mini crossover event between the Ultimate books as well this summer.
Mm-hmm. How are the Ultimate books selling? I mean, is this like a deal where, like, you know, maybe they're not doing so well, and it's like we need to...
Well, they haven't lit the world
on... We need to get some of that Dan Slott Spider-Man in there somewhere, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and of course, it's going to be 616 written by Bendis, so...
It's Bendis, yeah.
That'll be odd. I don't know if Bendis has ever written a 616 story where Spidey was actually the star instead of the guy who sits on the side and says funny things.
Ultimate Spider-Man TV show? Did he...
he hasn't written anything for
that. He's sort of, what do they call him? I guess he's a creative consultant.
Something. Yeah.
So. See, what else has Marvel announced? What else have they announced? Matt Fraction and David Aja, I'm not sure how you pronounce it. Are going to be doing a new Hawkeye ongoing series.
Ooh.
Oh, that's all we need is more Avengers characters with books. Thanks.
Well, that was my reaction, to be honest, because this is literally Hawkeye's sixth series since 2010.
It didn't do so well with that Mockingbird series, did it?
Yeah. Do we get to guess how many issues this one goes?
Well, this is the creative team of Immortal Iron Fist, and I remember, though.
But so the thing is now that the movie's coming out this month, he's going to be well-known. People are going to be reading more about him.
Well, Hawkeye is already everywhere, though. He's the leader of the Secret Avengers, he's a teacher in Avengers Academy, and he's on the Avengers regularly anyway.
He's busier than Spider-Man.
Really is. Hawkeye, has a history of headline. I mean, he was the star of Avengers Solo and Avengers Spotlight back in the late 80s, and then he was leader of the West Coast Avengers through to the early 90s, you know?
But I loved when he was leading Thunderbolts. Yeah,
and then he was the leader of the Thunderbolts in the late 90s, too, just coming into the early promotions. And then after that, he got his own series. Fabian Nicieza wrote a Hawkeye series in the early portion of the 2000s, which I think went to 8 whole issues. Then, he went quiet for a while. Then we got New Avengers: The Reunion, which was the miniseries that that reunited him with Mockingbird. Then we got the Hawkeye and Mockingbird series, which was canceled after 6 issues. Then its crossover with Black Widow, which had already been written, was published as a 4-issue miniseries. Then we got another Hawkeye miniseries, which was just, it hadn't been made already, but it was by the same writer again, so it was just the next link in the chain. And then he was the star of Avengers Solo, the miniseries that's just wrapped up like a month or two ago. So, you know, counting minis, this is literally Hawkeye's sixth series since 2010. Someone has a man boner for Hawkeye in the Marvel offices. I like Hawkeye, but...
yeah.
But I like Hawkeye without the sunglasses and his mask back on.
Oh no!
This
look is to stay.
I hate Hawkeye's costume. Oh, I hate Hawkeye's old costume.
This is a look to stay. I mean,
I hate his new design. My God, it's
this like design will quietly fade away after a while. Whenever the movie is sideways out of memory, we'll get his old mask back.
I don't like the old stuff. Hawkeye
has a very dated look, but there's a middle ground to be found somewhere. You should see some of his other costumes. They're even worse.
Yeah, so the old ones are really bad.
You should see him as Goliath? Wasn't he Goliath?
No, I'm thinking more of the bare-chested, sleeveless vest and headband look from the 70s.
Oh, I remember. Oh, my gosh. That was a flashback.
Well, though, to be fair, Fraction and Aja, that's a nice creative team. These are the guys who, you know, revamped Immortal Iron Fist, put him back on the map. And, you know, I wasn't too bothered about it, but it's been announced that this is more like Hawkeye's, because this is Hawkeye teamed up with Kate Bishop, Hawkeye from the Young Avengers.
Oh.
And that's pretty interesting. I think that, you know, Fraction says, I think there's a whole healthy person between the two of them.
Wow.
It's kind of interesting. I might give it a look based on Kate being in it.
She's not the one that's Ant-Man's daughter, is it? There's one that's Ant-Man's daughter, right?
No, that's Cassie Lang's daughter. She dead. Okay. She dead. She died in children's.
She's dead?
Yeah, it was really quite bad. It was very unceremonious.
I need to read that.
No end of the story. It was not worth killing her, but she dead anyway. No, this is the other one. Let's see, what else? Ryan Stegman, who has been drawing Scarlet Spider, is going to be leaving that book after issue 6, after the first story arc, and moving over to Fantastic Four to join up with Jonathan Hickman for the last couple of issues of his run. And Coy Pham will then be taking over art duties for Scarlet Spider. Let's see, just announced today, James Asmus is going to be writing an ongoing Gambit series starting in August.
Yeah, I saw that. Yay!
Why?
Wow. Who cried for that, other than Nicole, apparently?
I don't
get that. He had his own comic series. Nobody bought it. Why are they going to buy it now?
Hawkeye, I can understand, you know, just purely because of the precedent of recent years and movie. It is not 1997.
I know. I was going to say, who other than a handful of people locked in the 90s and Nicole would even care?
To be fair, I'm not knocking Nicole here. People locked in the 90s and
love Gambit.
Women.
Okay, now Gambit was with great love care Gambit. In the 90s. Gambit,
bitches love Gambit.
There's our quote of the week.
Gambit ongoing series.
Somebody put
bitches
that on our Twitter feed right now.
Now, this is why this doesn't matter, because, like, Gambit is in Wolverine and the X-Men. Like, he's there at the school teaching a class. He's never appeared in an issue of Wolverine and the X-Men. This is a non-comic.
The funny thing, I don't know when Gambit was last, not to be funny, but, like, I don't even know when Gambit was last relevant.
That's what I was going to say. Like, when is he ever?
When he shows up, people like me get excited. You're like, oh, yay, Gambit's showing up. Except for in Wolverine. That was bad.
Had to be in the 90s.
I mean,
I don't remember him doing anything like past 1990.
15 years ago.
Once they sorted out his backstory and put his romance with Rogue to rest, it's like, what's left?
Yeah, you know? It's not...
Dodgy Del Boy from Only Fools and Horses, French accent, and...
Playing cards.
Nothing wrong with any of that stuff.
He throws playing cards. That's really great.
Hey, have you ever got a paper cut from one of those?
He was the best character in X-Men versus Street Fighter. Don't talk shit about him throwing cards.
Yes, because that's important and relevant to comics.
Gambit is one of those odd ones. It is curious, though. I mean, I think largely, I say blame. I don't really mean blame, but I think like the 90s X-Men cartoon is like in large part to blame for Gambit's popularity because he's really like locked in people's minds as a big X-Men character because of it. But where everyone else who was in that show was a major member of the team, like,
not everyone in that show is a major part of the team. Jubilee could kiss off.
But Jubilee's the kid appeal point of view character. She does, obviously. Nobody's crying out for that. That's like crying out for a fucking Scrappy Doo
little. The thing is, they have that Wolverine. But wait, they had that Wolverine and Jubilee comic.
Last year.
That was following on from Curse of the Mutants, like, so she was a vampire, and that was just
is
the
she
epilogue.
Still a vampire?
Yeah, she's still a vampire, funnily enough.
Oh, wow.
So she uses her powers, she'll turn to dust, right? Because, like,
she lost her powers after M-Day, so that
she's not even a mutant anymore.
No, she's a vampire now.
Just a vampire, not even a mutant.
She's a sparkly vampire now.
They should give her players back just to make that joke.
They should just make a X-Men comic in which they just pick on the 90s X-Men characters.
Jubilee was from the late 80s, you know. Gambit, I think, was introduced, like, it was probably introduced on the 1st of July, January 1990, you know. The second the 90s Gambit was there. Well, James Osmond is a good writer. He was working on Generation Hope, and now that that's over, he's moving over to this, you know.
All I care about is, do we know where Jonathan Hickman's going when he's done with Fantastic
Four? Oh, not yet. There's been no word of that. We do know that there's going to be...
Oh, my God. Chris McFeely, you have no idea how close you were, sir. First appearance was Uncanny X-Men Annual number 14, 1990.
Oh, my God. Find me a month of publication.
Let's see.
Well, I announced that there is going to be a Mighty Thor Journey into Mystery crossover event coming up in the subsequent months.
Hey, that's all right.
What else is happening?
Journey into Mystery is awesome.
Always.
Mm-hmm.
What else?
Especially now that I got a little story.
Jimmy McKelvey is going to be becoming the regular artist for Defenders, starting with issue 8. That's good. Jimmy McKelvey's good. I'm enjoying that. I'm looking forward to that. That Mighty Thor and Journey into Mystery crossover is going to be called Everything Burns. Ooh, and it's going to feature the return of Surtur. So it's going to follow on from when Loki freed Surtur during Fear Itself.
Ooh.
That's really deserving. That's good. I like that.
Oh, yeah. You haven't seen...
Shut up.
Never mind.
Don't say
nothing. Nothing.
Right. Have you got me a month of publication there, Aunt JD?
I'm working on it, sir.
Because I think I'm out of news. I think that's about all the major stuff that's happened, unless something's been announced since I clicked this link.
Oh, no. Like I was saying, Thief of Thieves is going to become a TV series. From the same people that brought Walking Dead, so that's what I'm reading in the series. I can see it actually doing well. So,
wait, you know, I have to say,
what'd you say?
A Thief of Thieves. It's a new Image comic. So there's only been 3 issues. I actually have all 3 right now, and they're actually going to be making it into a TV show. AMC is going to be making it into a TV show.
Huh.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah, it's actually a really good story. So,
I
could see it doing really well. That's the news I heard. So,
I cannot find a publication date for this.
You're just consumed with that.
I know.
See if I can find it.
Yeah,
later.
See if you can find it. Well, I'm mentioning. I do want to mention one thing. So, at my comic shop, we had to redo our pull list this week, and I was going through and adding stuff. And I'll be damned if I didn't get to Before Watchmen, and I put a check mark next to every damn.
Yeah.
I'm afraid I might be doing the same thing.
I couldn't stop myself. August 1990,
I'm at least getting Minutemen and Silk Spectre, so we can talk about those. August, you say?
Well, August, he appeared in Uncanny 266, which was 1990, and the brief appearance was in Uncanny
Annual. Actually, hang on a second. I don't know what I'm fucking wittering on about. I've got Gambit's first appearance sitting next to me here. Fuck's sake.
Sorry about that. So it's looking like it was probably July.
I'll tell you right now.
But still, that's pretty damn close, sir.
Yeah. I thought his first appearance was actually in an issue, not an annual.
What number did you quote?
It's saying Uncanny X-Men Annual number 14. Or
because
Uncanny.
I thought it was like a Jim Lee issue, like an actual numbered issue. Because I had it for a while until I got like suckered out of it by somebody.
You know what the hilarious thing about this volume of Essential X-Men is? Because it's so 90s. And there's so much crossover going on. Literally less than half the comics in this are issues of X-Men.
Oh, it doesn't surprise me at all.
How big is that? That looks very good.
That's phone book size.
Holy.
Those things are huge.
But it's black and
white. What's a phone book?
It's a phone book. That's awesome.
Okay, we got to get on to some
Yeah, we've
reviews.
Got...
But before we do that, JD, what issue number did you say again there, aside from after the annual? What was the other one?
I'm sorry, 266.
266, dude, dickety six. No, that's New Mutants. No, that's Fantastic Four.
Yeah, it was Chris Claremont and Jim Lee, so...
266... Oh, yeah, here we go, 266. Gambit is the title of the story. Let's see, now, what are the publication dates in this? 1990...
Isn't the cover of the issue, like, him and, like Little Girl Storm or something? I seem to remember that was the cover of the issue.
Oh, wow, there you go.
Yeah.
Right there.
Ah, I got a great memory, I told you.
Oh, man.
That's got a date of late August on it, so this was the month when Marvel was recalibrating their dating system on the covers.
Early God, I love 90s X-Men so much and hate it at the same time.
Early August. Shit, right, that means this is 4 months, that's 3 months. 3 August. Hang on. June, July, August. That's maybe... April. That's either May or June. So it was only about 5 or 6.
So you were pretty damn close without even knowing it. So there you go. Awesome. Well, let's get on. So much stuff. So hopefully there'll be more stuff coming out of C2E2. But, but there you go. That's a nice little cross section of it.
Reviews brisk today.
Chris Triplett, then. I guess we will start with reviews for the week.
I'm going to talk about a Spider-Man comic. Shocker! Oh my god!
It's with Shocker?
No, Shocker.
Oh,
it's a Shocker that I'm talking about.
It is a Shocker. Is that like a pun as well? Is it?
But it's not Amazing Spider-Man, and it's not Ultimate Spider-Man. It's that book that I don't normally buy called Avenging Spider-Man. Which, I don't know why I don't buy Avenging Spider-Man.
Because it sucks. The only reason you bought this is because it's got Daredevil and it's written by Mark Waid.
I don't think it sucks.
You leave Zeb Wells alone, okay? I can get on board the Joe Madd hit train, no problem. Stopping at all stations, no problem. But Zeb Wells is fine. And he did a very good issue with Captain America last month, too.
I just don't care.
Yeah, I think it's because, like, it's the whole team-up thing. I think that maybe... It's like, well, team-up books are good, but team-up books at, like, $4 an issue is kind of asking for me. I don't know. You know? I don't know. But I didn't need another book. But, you know, this is the first part of an ongoing story in the Daredevil comic that I love. So I had to buy this. So Avengers Spider-Man number 6.
If you're reading Daredevil, you got to get this. The Omega Effect is just a Daredevil story that's branched out into a couple of other comics here.
Yeah, you know, pretty much. Even in this issue. It's like, hey, Spidey and the Punisher show up, but you know what? It's a Daredevil comic, pretty much. You know? Just to give a little bit of backstory, I think the last thing that happened with the whole Mega Drive thing, Matt Murdock got tired of all the Mega Crime guys planning and plotting to do something and not
dallying,
actually
dallying around. Yes, this was in Daredevil 10.1, a point one issue that mattered.
Yeah, a point one issue that mattered. Oh my god, like every issue of Daredevil matters. That's awesome. Even the point ones, which usually don't. But, remind me, so, like, basically what happened was Daredevil got tired of them just kind of, like, not doing anything, and so he acted, and didn't he upload the information to the Daily Bugle, or what exactly did he do?
He had Reed Richards take from the drive the data on Black Spectre. It's got data on AIM, Hydra, Black Spectre, Argence, Byzantine, and, who's the fifth?
Got it right.
Yeah.
Hydra, Black Spectre, Agents, Byzantine, and the Secret Empire.
Secret Empire. The guys with the hoods.
Is the Secret Empire the dudes from Secret Avengers, or is that something else?
No, that's the... Nah, I don't even care. The color
boys. Yeah, the Max Fury guys, whatever they got.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. No, the Secret Empire was from an old Captain America story. They turned out their leader was
it
Richard.
It doesn't really matter. Not
at this point. he got tired. As long as he holds the drive, they won't make an attack on him. His family are safe as long as he holds the drive. There'll be no retribution because he'll let the info out. But to prompt them into acting to end the situation sooner, he releases the data on Black Spectre, just Black Spectre, and takes, you know, the organization basically crumbles right in front of all the other members of this five-way deal. So now they have to make their move.
Well, and he did that because the Black Spectre had actually, like, tried to work behind the scenes from the other group.
Yeah, like, they all agreed to work together.
Yeah.
The Mega Crime people agreed not to act unless, like, all of them acted together, but then Black Spectre did something.
If any one of them acts, then one of them gets the drive, and one of them has power over the other four, and that's just a crime war starts.
Yeah. But, like,
it's a situation.
Oh, yeah. So, like, the fallout of that is, you know, now it's basically all bets are off, and those Megacron groups have just put the word out on the street that, like, you know, everybody, you know, kill Matt Murdock, or, you know, or kill Daredevil. And so, like, this issue starts with Spider-Man fighting a bunch of hand ninjas that are on their way, I guess, to, you know, kill Matt Murdock. Which it kind of gives a little bit of backstory with the stuff with Reed, because Daredevil went to Reed to... I guess get help with the Omega Drive, and after he helped him, I guess Reed thought he was going to give it to him, but then Matt Murdock just he left with it.
Yeah.
And it's a little funny comment where, like, you know, Reed couldn't go after him because he says he was too busy.
I can't abandon this experiment without destroying a neighboring universe.
Yeah, he's like, I couldn't turn around to go after Daredevil because I could, like, accidentally destroy this universe if I stopped doing this experiment. So that's basically what Reed Richards does in this issue. He's just, you know, standing
there. He's just there to drop the exposition.
But he gets, like, a Spidey involved because, like, he's like, hey, you're friends with Daredevil, right? He's like, yeah, I guess, you know? He's like, hey, this is what went down. Could you, like, you know, go and, you know, help him out or stop what's going to happen? And Spidey's like, okay. And then, you know, he's fighting hand ninjas, like I said.
Woo!
And if you're reading, like, some of the other books, like if Punisher, which, you know, I don't talk about it much. Punisher's excellent. It's really good. People should be reading it. Greg Rucker writes it. It's awesome. In the last issue of it, you know, he found out about the Omega Drive. And Punisher got it in his head that, hey, if somebody needs that, I need that. Because if I have that, I could just kill all those sons of guns and just be done with this shit. He doesn't want it, you know, to like, you know, save people. No, he just wants to kill them all. Because then he'll have information on all of them. Hydra, AIM, everybody. So he goes to Matt Murdock, you know, because he finds out that Matt Murdock has it.
Yeah, because what is this line that Spidey says here? Because Matt Murdock has the worst kept secret identity since Hannah Montana.
Oh my god!
the person that does the art in this book is, I think, actually the main artist for Punisher.
Yeah,
because
what's his name? Marco Cicchetto. Cicchetto. Yeah.
It's very nice. I mean,
makes me wonder if he's going to be drawing this month's issue of Punisher or not, if he had time on his schedule.
The newest issue, which I had to, like, get caught up on Punisher before reading this, because, like, I was starting to read this first, and I had, like, two issues behind, and, like, something in it referenced something that I had not read in the Punisher comic yet, and I was like, oh, shit, I need to go back and read Punisher.
Stop that, man.
So stop that right now. I went and read it. So, yeah, the newest issue was a fill-in artist, so maybe...
Maybe he was making time to do two.
Yeah, maybe they had to do, like, Avenging Spider-Man, and I don't know, maybe they're going to do, like, the next issue of Punisher or something that's part of the crossover.
Yeah,
but,
good.
Like, yeah, that would be good, like, two issues, that'd be awesome. But, yeah, it's very nice looking. It's really, really good looking. I don't know how to explain how the art works. It's kind of, I don't want to say Marvel Knights-ish or...
There's tiniest slant of manga. The very tiniest. In the faces.
Yeah.
There's just something around the eyes, you know? And it's really not the grim bleakness that one expects from the Punisher. It can go there.
Killing stuff, man, it gets gruesome. It's really... The Vulture issue was like, oh my god.
Ooh, yeah. that was all set at night. Dark streets swept with snow, red with blood, you know. But then you get these scenes in Matt Murdock's apartment, and this is just, you know, it's very, very close to even the regular Daredevil comic, with just a little more dimension to the art. You know, not that that's a knock on the art in Daredevil, but, you know, it's got that slightly more minimalist, flat sort of look to it, you know.
Lines in Daredevil's suit when he puts it on, which I immediately noticed it. I was, like, thinking, like, the lines you see, like, in the DC costumes now, which... Yeah, like the seams and stuff in the costume and stuff like that. It's that detailed that they put that into it. But it's really nice. So it looks good. I'm good with the art. But basically what happens is, like, Punisher is grilling Matt Murdock, trying to get the Omega Drive, and he says, "Oh yeah, I'm not going to give it to you because I know what you're going to do with it. You know, you're just going to kill them all, and then they have an accessory to the murder to commit. You know, I'm a lawyer. You know, duh." While they're, like, talking, of course, Spider-Man drops in with the hand ninjas that he took out, and like, they're just kind of trying to decide, like, what are we going to do here? You know, they wind up having to take out... Yeah, there's this big fight sequence where they have to take out the hand ninjas.
I think that's the funniest word. It sounds so dirty.
Well, if I just put the hand, then I don't know if people know what I'm talking about. But
yeah,
they take the out, and then they.
What?
What?
I don't know where Nicole went.
I was just yeah. So dirty. I don't know why.
Maybe because you're dirty.
No.
But basically, what comes down to in the issues, like what's so important about it, is that they have to decide what to do with the Omega Drive now. And it's like, he can't keep it because, you know, they're just going to keep coming for Matt Murdock. He can't give it to the Avengers or something because, you know, as it is right now, it's the only thing that's keeping, like, Foggy alive, you know, and all of his friends alive. He can't give it to Punisher because he's just going to go kill a bunch of people with it. So they put together, like, this crazy plan at the end of it where they're going to, you know, just kind of, like... create like a big old war between like everybody.
The info Reed pulled, there's some overlapping info, you know, so the Punisher will be able to use that scant few scraps of info that came out with the Black Spectre info to target the four organizations. And then Daredevil and Spidey will follow the Punisher's lead, tracking down that information while the drive is in Reed's hands, being hacked for all the information so it can be released to the world. And they'll keep the crime cartels busy so they can't target Daredevil once they know that it's out of his hands.
Yeah, but then they say something like they're going to like have them all in like one spot, and like they're going to try to take them all out, and like. It's like, yeah,
the noisiest three-man, one-woman blitz of all time.
Yeah, something like that. And
they're just gonna hit them all in rapid succession. Rather than bring them all into one place, they're just gonna hit them all like as quickly as possible, one after the other, or you know, as much as they can do. You know.
Yeah, there's this great comment where he's gonna agree, like everybody's gonna agree to it, and Punisher says we'll need 40 minutes to prep the action. And I think Spidey says with zero fatalities, and Punisher says 45.
You know, Spidey is definitely the character who seems to have less of a point being in this story. You know, it makes sense for Punisher to come after this, and this is Daredevil's story. But they've managed to wheedle out a little niche for him to fill here, and that he is the intermediary between these two guys. And it's still allowing them to play with Dan Slott's recent, you know, nobody dies Spidey. So that's coming into play. So that's good.
He really doesn't want like Punisher, like even like at the end of the issue where like they've all agreed to what they're gonna do. He talks about like you know how great of a friend I am to you, DD. You know, talking to Daredevil, and he says how because in order to save your hide, I just teamed up with the Punisher, which is like a big deal to him because, like, he's this mass murdering guy.
Remember the 90s? Spidey teamed up with the Punisher every Tuesday.
Yeah.
He has had a problem with him since he had a Max comic.
Team Up and... Tuesday? Is that what it was? Team Up Tuesday?
There was like a comment in this issue which I just thought was just great. The thing, because like there's that character, that lady that's was in the first Punisher.
We haven't mentioned her, but she's in this. What's her name?
Rachel Cole.
Rachel Cole Aves.
Yeah, she was the survivor of the wedding. She was the bride.
Yeah, she's the bride of this wedding massacre that happened in the first issue of the Punisher. And now she's out for revenge, and she's teamed up with the Punisher. Spidey spends the whole issue trying to think up a good name for her.
Yeah, but like the comment that I'm talking about is like when he's like, you know, fight it, don't say it, resist, urge, he'll kill you if you don't say it. And then he says, "So, I see you've started dating again, stupid mess." You know?
Punisherette. Punisherini.
Yeah.
Lady but Punisher. Yeah.
it's good. Like, if you don't pick up the issues, I'm sure they're going to collect it in a trade. Like, totally get it.
I wonder how they're going to collect this. That's the thing. Because, you know, you've got... First Daredevil trade has 6 issues in it.
Yeah.
And then what are they going to do? They're going to do... There's only 3 issues of Daredevil between that and this.
Well, let's see. What was the Black Cat story? Was it like 2 issues or something?
Yeah, that was issue. Oh, that's right. No, there was like the Spidey crossover too, wasn't there?
There's the 2 issue with Black Cat, and then there's the point one. And there's 3 issues of this. That'd be a trade, wouldn't it?
So there'd be issue 7, 8, 9, and 10. 7, 8, 9, and 10 plus the issue of Spidey. Yeah, so that would be 5. So that's probably the second Daredevil trade, and then this will be the 4th Daredevil trade. But they'll probably just call it the Omega Effect, and it'll contain point one, because that's really the prologue, and these 3 parts. It'll be a small 4-part trade. Yeah, that sounds about right.
If you're reading Daredevil, if you're reading Punisher, you have to friggin' get this book. I mean, you have no choice. It kind of sucks, but you know that's the way it is. But it's a good book, so pick it up.
I mean, I think one of the best things about this is if you read Daredevil and/or Punisher, this is not some third wheel creative team coming on here, because we didn't point it out. But this is written by Wade and Rucka.
Wade and Rucka writes it, and the artist for Punisher draws it. So I'm assuming it'll be like, I guess, something similar with the Daredevil and maybe the Punisher issue also. I don't know.
Well, I don't know. I'm presuming Chichetto's probably just going to draw the Punisher, and then presumably Polito or Martin will draw the Daredevil issue.
Yeah.
And so it's all it's very much a Daredevil story that has roped a couple of guest stars into it, you know, but it's been well played out. You know, everyone has a good reason to be here and a good role in the story. It's just a nice tight 3 characters, 3-parter, and I've been looking forward to it for a long time. And the first issue definitely satisfied.
Yep.
Good.
Cool.
Nice. Be a good first issue to even grab, because you don't even really need to have read Daredevil up until now to get in on this. Regular readers of Avenging Spider-Man should feel fairly filled in by Mr. Fantastic's info dump at the start. So, even you know, if you can't bring yourself to just read Daredevil on its own, even after all of our recommendations, you know, and you feel you need to like temper it with a little Spidey or a little Punisher, you could do.
What's
far
wrong
worse.
With you?
Yeah well,
what's
too.
Wrong with you? Just read Daredevil.
You could do far worse than
I've been
suckered
into reading it.
This one.
So, cool.
Don't say suckered. It's a great book.
It is a good book.
All right.
Come on. 2 blind men fighting against each other. How awesome was that?
Totally.
Dancing with the dead. Come on.
Okay. Nicole.
All right. Well, I'm going to be reviewing Smoke and Mirrors number 2. Last month we reviewed it, and apparently we got noticed for a review. So. They liked us. Well, I'm going to continue on with the review because I actually I'm starting to get really intrigued by these characters. So I'm going to go ahead and tell you a little bit more about it. At the last of at the end of the last issue, there we go. We see Ethan who found a gun. Now they're in a different world. They've never seen a gun before, and of course he's found this gun, and he's checking it out. Of course. Like with anyone that's really curious, he's looking right down at the barrel, and he's got his finger on the trigger too. But Terry saves him in time before it goes off in his face. And Terry's the magician that's he keeps on talking about, I'm not from here, but he doesn't say where he's from as of yet. So he saves Ethan from this tragedy of blowing his brains to the other side of the sidewalk. And everyone else that's around, they're in shock, like, what just happened? No one's ever seen this. And he's like, this is why I don't do this trick here. You guys get too scared. And I'm like, okay, so why is he here? And why does he have a gun? Why did he bring a gun? And, of course, he's going off on Ethan. He says, do not follow me. Do not even contact me. Stay away from me. Never get in touch with me. But being a typical teenage kid, what does he do? You tell him not to do something. What is he going to do? He follows him home. So he follows Terry home, who has a very interesting security. He has his front door locked with a chain and a lock on the outside, which apparently he redoes when he gets back inside. Well, Ethan's looking inside at Terry, and he's just sitting back, relaxing. He's flipping cards from his front forehand to the back of his hand. And, of course, Ethan's mesmerized by just this little trick, because he's never seen this, because in his world, they have real magic. You know, you do everything by thought. Everything has potions and magical spells. Even in this, they're talking about the heating system has to have the right kind of spell to put on so to get the thermostat to work. And so I'm like, okay, that's kind of interesting. So he catches Ethan spying in on him. And he's like, well, I want to know what you're doing. I want to know how you do that. And he's starting to, you know, come across as a kid. He's like, okay, fine. If you want to know, I'll teach you. But Ethan has to bring his mom by just to get permission, make sure everything is okay. And he actually shows Terry the one trick that he learned, you know, the finger pulling one. He's like, look what I learned to do. You know, he's like, how did you learn that? And he's like, I took your book. So he took the magician's book on, like, these little spells that most people would know. But in this world, they've never seen it. And so they have, like, this whole collage of different teaching tricks. He shows them disappearing coin. He shows them how to twirl a wand. He shows them different stuff with rubber bands and the balls and stuff. It's really, really good collage. But he comes across a CD. He's like, what's this? He's like, oh, those are just coasters here. So they don't have CDs either. But one thing he found fascinating was how he flips the cards from hand to hand. So he's trying to... It's just a really good teaching scene. And then... he's back at school. He's not paying attention to what, you know, magic spells are working on. He's just playing with cards. And, of course, he gets in trouble for that. Bullies come and pick on him because he's such a dork for believing in such childish things. And, of course, he gets into a big fight. And that's when his Terry, the magician, kind of like, becomes his father figure. He takes him in. He comforts him. And he's... And then he also meets up with another friend. And his friend is totally interested. This new guy saw him doing all these tricks on the bench. And he's very interested. But there's another little secret. His dad wants to know more about Ethan and his magician friend. And so, he looks very sinister. You know, he has the pyramid. He's like, oh, I've got something going on here. So it comes out to be the guy who did the demonstration in the first book about the new wonderful world, about just doing magic with your thoughts. So you finally have set up the villain in the story. We've set up more that Terry and Ethan are going to be more of a father-son figure. The development is really good. Plus, at the very end, this is what's really cool, they actually give you a sheet to cut out, and you do, and they teach you this whole, new magic trick. I haven't cut it up yet, but even said that they're like, "Oh, don't worry."
Yeah, I was going to ask if it taught you another magic trick, because I remember the first one taught you tricks.
Yeah, it tells you. And they're like, "He's like, you're like, oh no, but my comic book copy won't be mint." Well, we thought of that. We instructed the store to stock multiple copies so you could buy another.
Wow, so,
yeah,
that's
yeah, so you got parts here. I'll just show it to you guys. And you can cut them out, and they actually have instructions on how to do this magic trick. And it looks like one of them that Terry was trying to teach Ethan in the collage. And so they actually go step by step with how you're supposed to do it. I'm like, I'm tempted to do it, like make a copy at my work to try it out. So I think I might do that. So, but it teaches you step by step. I'm like, that's awesome. So you get to learn some magic tricks. I mean, it's nothing like mind blowing, but it'll be fun. It'd be fun to get to know. So
sweet.
Yeah, I'm really liking the character development in this. You actually know your two main characters, what they're like, what they're about, and now you've set up the bad guy. So, yeah, I'm really liking this series. It's really good, especially the whole magic tricks.
I was kind of hoping this one would teach you how to saw a dude in half or something.
That'd be awesome. It's really easier than you think, Chris.
whatever magic that they're showing in the comic book, they teach you at the end, and I'm like, oh, this is going to be cool. That's got me, my interest right there. So especially since they have a magician working on the staff. So.
Mm-hmm. I mean, all you need is really a saw, Chris Triplett. You just
I want the person to survive.
Oh, wow. Oh. You got to get all technical.
You know what? It's just be a one-time trick.
It's easy to saw somebody in half.
It's a great trick, but I can only do it once.
chainsaw and just like butter.
Not to be able to kill anything from waist down. So.
Like butter, just ooh. Anyway. Cool, awesome, very good.
So I'm liking it. So yeah, it's on my pull list. So I'm definitely going to be reading more on that. So Mike Costas actually intrigued me. He knows how to write human characters.
Yeah, I mean, and I want to clarify. I mean, I know that we gave Mike a ton of crap for his Transformers writing, but you know, I don't think we meant to question or even question his ability to, you know, write human characters. Obviously, he's written a lot of compelling stuff. So. So it's good to see he's got something that's really working and doing well for him. So,
I'm really interested. What's going to happen when Ethan finds out more about our world and real, you know, fooling magic instead of, you know, wizard magic? So, sleight of the hand stuff. So, yeah, I'm excited to see how it goes on. So,
awesome. I'm going to talk about something I've talked about the last several issues of this, I think, and I am still championing this. Someone will read this, hopefully. Chris Triplett should be reading this.
I got too many books.
You need to drop
something
else.
I'm not getting Avenging Spider-Man. Why would I get Scarlet Spider at this point?
This is good. This is fun. This is interesting stuff. So Scarlet Spider, obviously, I guess, is what I'm reviewing. This issue starts out with a little bit of a flashback to, I guess, an assassination that Kane was pulling off, obviously, several years ago.
Man, remember when Kane did assassinations? Man, that is like 20 years ago.
Yeah. and
that was like a one-time thing Kane did in like one comic before they revealed him.
Most of the time, I just remember him doing some funny fire thing with his hand and, like, burning people or something.
Yeah, that gets into this here, too. Where, so he kills these two people with that, with, you know, the touch thing that burns part of their face or whatever and kills them. And it just shows the aftermath, essentially. And the, like, whole Assassin's Guild shows up, and it's a message from Belladonna, who's like, hey... by the way, you're in our territory, and if you're going to be killing people, we think that's fantastic, except you owe us tribute, and or you need to join the guild, because we kind of have a guild thing, you know, it's sort of
Wait, this is like Belladonna, like Gambit's wife?
Yes,
this is like Gambit's wife. Gambit? Whoa, it's yes. Capable this week.
Yeah. So bring it all the way back around, yes sir, it is. All
right, we're talking about Gambit. I
like is he still in Texas?
Yes, yes. He's still in Houston.
In Texas?
I don't know. They expanded their territory, I guess.
They expanded down Louisiana, huh?
Well, it's not. This story is in New Orleans, but he's in Houston. Now, this explains why.
Oh, right. Okay, sorry. Yeah, this is a flashback story.
This is a flashback story. So, okay. So she's like, cool, you know, you're going to owe us tribute for the assassinations, and you need to join the guild, because it's sort of like a union thing, and you got dues and all that stuff. So, and Kane's like, fuck you, and the horse you rode in on. and apparently doesn't join the guild. So then we flash into the present day, and as soon as he was seen on the news, he had sort of stayed like one step ahead of the Assassin's Guild all this time, just by not, you know, staying too long in one place. But now
by virtue of nobody remembering who the fuck they are.
Correct.
He was magically able to stay under their radar because nobody ever wrote them again.
Nobody ever wrote them or cared, yes. But no, they send like four of their top assassins after him.
Are you saying like all the characters that are going to appear in Scarlet Spider are going to be 90s characters just like Kane?
I'm going to say, I'm actually saying that this is actually like a... It's like a retro 90s series.
They're all from
series.
Like the same universe. It's like universe, you know, 617.
Well, and that's kind of what I like.
I'm a little hung up on the fact that we're supposed to believe Kane has spent all of his life in every previous appearance looking over his shoulder, checking to see if Gambit's ex-wife was there.
That's what this says. So, the most of this first part of this issue is a lot of fighting these four different assassins. One guy seems to be a master of pistols, of weaponry. Another is sort of your more classic ninja, except he's like, I don't know, very old and dead, and apparently can't be killed. because Kane tries really hard to kill him and doesn't work very well. So back on the ranch.
These guys don't have names, do they?
If they do, they are not named here.
Really
a,
old
like
dead
this guy is a, like this guy is a hand ninja. Really, I mean, he's referenced as being ninja. a hand ninja. It all ties together here, people. I'm just, you know.
I had a hand ninja.
Hand ninjas, Gambit, 90s, ties together. Got it.
I mean, it's all, everything's relevant today, people. let's see. It just says, yeah, I don't know if any of these guys are named here. I was actually, before my review, trying to look them up as well, and I can't really place them. Anyway, this guy is supposed to be...
It would be perfect if you were talking about TMNT today and you were talking about the foot. It would just... Everything would just click.
Everything would click. So back on the ranch, our young couple here... And not young couple, I guess our couple of guys. The one that's the doctor and then his partner is the police officer. Apparently they are trying to get someone off of their back or something. Anyway, there's this rich guy that's trying to kill the doctor because he blames him for killing his children. And apparently he's hired the Assassin's Guild to kill this guy as well. That ends in a bit of a Mexican standoff. There's another little part of here where this girl that, Kane is protecting, another woman that he's met here has taken her out shopping for like clothes and things. And there starts to be hints that this little girl has more going on. You know, so it's not, I mean, obviously there was a reason that they were trying to kill her in the first place, but, like, out of nowhere she starts to speak English, which she's only spoke Spanish up to this point. There's something else that happens later, but we get back to this fight scene, and I do kind of say where this is like a retro, almost like a retro 90s. I mean, in a sense, like, this is what Spider-Man would be like if he would have been, like, totally balls out in the 90s, basically. You know, it's like, this is a very hardcore...
I think if you're doing a Kane series, you have to embrace that element of it in a bit.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it works. I mean, it totally works for this series, because Kane, like, in this one sequence, the guy is shooting at him. So he goes out for the kick. He gets the kick across the neck, but not before the shot goes off. Kane gets shot through the shoulder, and he disarms the guy. So, he has these teleporters, like, in the palms of his hands, and I guess he's about to recall another set of pistols. But insane, Kane reaches out and crushes his hands.
Oh,
like,
God.
Breaks
oh,
all Lord. Of his fingers.
That's the way to do it.
Yeah, he's like, use your guns now. It's awesome as they're
Spidey
fighting.
Spidey would web them up. He breaks his hands.
Exactly. I mean, that's the total difference. Yeah. So Kane jumps out, and there's this like girl standing in a little like reflecting pool, and he tells her to run, and she just like repeats what he says, and then another one of these assassins. I think I've seen this guy before. He uses two swords, mostly black costume, but with a skull painted on his face.
I just looked it up on Comic Vine. They are all pre-existing members of the guild, but nobody I could like.
Yeah, I can't. I've seen them, but I can't name them.
It sounded like you was talking about Crossbones for a second.
No, yeah, he looks a bit like Crossbones.
But this girl ends up having some kind of, you know, odd powers as well. Like, she's really strong. Throws Kane across the room. You know, Kane gets hit across the face with a sword. I mean, he's obviously getting pretty tore up in this fight. But,
is he actually Scarlet Spider costume? Because you said like he wasn't wearing it in the issue.
He's
right?
wearing yeah, he's wearing the costume now. And this is the stealth suit that Peter created.
Mm.
So that comes into play finally here, where he's sort of surrounded. All four of these assassins have surrounded him, and so he cloaks his suit and then punches the old dead ninja through the head, pulls out the sword, cuts the leg off of one of the other guys, and then smashes the girl's head into the ground. So finally all that's left is the dude that he broke his hands, and the guy can't even, of course, pull the trigger on the gun, so he makes him use his phone and call Belladonna. So he talks to Belladonna, and he basically says, you know, look, here's the deal. I'll do one job for you, and then my debt will be paid, and that'll be it. I'll do one job for you for free, and then I'm free and clear, and this is over. And she agrees. And she teleports her assassins out. Meanwhile, the assassins with the other two, with the gay couple, gone. I don't know. That just seems like an odd side story. It didn't really pertain too much, other than it was related to those characters that are you know, basically part of the story. But the last part of this is really, it's again this issue where Kane's trying to, he's really struggling with who he's becoming and who he was. So he's still riding that line between the fact that he's sort of becoming a heroic hero, a character, even though he really doesn't want to be. And he also was a real bastard. So, like, he's cleaning up after his fight, and, you know, one of the things that he sees in the mirror is, like, images of all the people he's killed. And they all, of course, have, like, the mark of
Scar on them.
Yeah. And he literally, like, on panel vomits into the toilet, which is kind of awesome.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I remember Kane was hard. Kane wouldn't have vomited no place.
So, yeah, well, and it was some girl. So I wonder if it was some, I don't know, he mentions a girl by name and then vomits. So I don't know if it was some girl he killed or something that he
What was the name?
Louise. Yeah, yeah, Louise.
Yeah, that okay. that was his, one of the legendary kills of Kane. It was an old love of his.
Yeah,
the first love he had when he was out there in the world after, you know, when he was drifting, and she died. But I don't remember the precise circumstances of it, because she did wind up with the mark on her face. But I don't. Did he kill her? I think maybe he thought she'd ratted. She was a police officer. And I think maybe she thought she'd ratted him out, or maybe she ratted him out and he killed her. Well, anyway, her being dead was the whole reason that a large part of the Clone Saga happened, because Peter Parker's fingerprints were on her face, so Peter was arrested for her murder.
Yeah, and that seems to be the trigger for this. So
she's his Uncle Ben, whatever. You know, she's his big guilt figure.
So is Kane being careful that, you know, none of this is coming back to Peter in New York? Like, is Belladonna going to show up in New York and try to kill Peter Parker at some point?
I think there's been a point. Somehow the people that know, like, are in the know, at least know that. I mean, obviously they went after him, so they know he's Kane. And he is being called, like, the Scarlet Spider of Houston. So, I mean, I think apparently it's pretty obvious to the media that this is not Spider-Man, you know, because
Spider-Man lives in New York.
Spider-Man lives in New York. This guy is here, but obviously has, you know, very Spider-Man-like powers and things. Because there's even a story on the news, and apparently this girl, I can't remember, but this girl that wasn't apparently aware that Kane was Spider-Man, was this Scarlet Spider-Man, because as they're watching the news, this girl that Kane had saved mentions, you know, they're talking about Scarlet Spider, and she's like, yeah, Kane, you know. She's like, what? So, yeah, Kane's not doing a very good job of protecting his identity.
I figured he wouldn't.
as it were.
It was like not an issue for it.
Well, and that I think will be a bit of an issue because he looks an awful lot like Peter. Yeah. So I don't know how much they're going to play with that. I mean, obviously he has a very different haircut. He has sort of a very short.
I see a crossover with Amazing Spider-Man in the future.
I do see that happening. Although I really hope that they delay that as much as possible because I think this story is doing I think this comic is doing a good job of standing on its own. But if you're looking for something that's like Spider-Man but a little bit more hard edge, I mean, this is definitely the way to go. It's an interesting story that's like that progression of a redemption story. So you obviously have a character that was a villain, but he's not even, and that's the thing, he's not even really trying to redeem himself. It's not like he's had some sort of epiphany and he's trying to be better. He's just trying to figure out who he is. He really doesn't, that's really, I think, what's interesting to me is that this is not like a character that's trying to necessarily reform himself. Obviously, he has no problem killing people. He has, this whole thing where he's like, I'll do one job for the Assassin's Guild. I mean, obviously, that's not a very heroic thing to do. It's certainly not what Peter would do.
I'm kind of interested where they're going to go with that, too.
Yeah, I mean,
like,
so,
who's that one job?
Exactly. Again, if you talk about the Parker luck, I mean, Kane has got it down pat. Because it's just like every time he tries to do something right, even though he's not really wanting to, then that thing goes horribly wrong as well. So,
current trends would suggest that they'll probably send him to kill Danny Ketch or something like that.
That would be awesome.
Oh, that's great. Oh no, you like Danny Ketch?
No, I like him dead.
That's awesome. And then it could be written by Greg Rucka. Oh my god.
Greg Rucka come into this?
It's a little, it's like I said, it's a little bit kind of a 90s feel, but I think it totally works for it considering it's Kane. It's a good read. Please check it out. I totally suggest that Chris Triplett at least pick up an issue or two.
I'd like to, but I got too many books.
That's, maybe. What are you going to do? skip lunch one day. I mean, come on. So. All right, cool. All right, then, moving on. Chris McFeely.
What's up? Is it my turn?
It's your turn, sir.
Okay, I am going to talk this week about another new series, Secret from Image. Number one, this is Jonathan Hickman's other new series from Image, hot on the heels of The Manhattan Project from last month. This is written by Hickman with art by Ryan Bodenheim. And, I'll just describe it for you. So, the issue begins with a break-in to the home of, I just have to look up it, Robert Dunn, some kind of industrialist / magnate type, lives on an estate.
Mm.
A masked man breaks into his house, brutalizes him, wrenches teeth out of his head and threatens his
family. That made me squirm so bad. Yes. I have this thing with teeth. So to actually see that, I was like, oh.
Tooth stuff will do it for me too, all right. It's really nasty. Pliers in there. And he does it in the most calm and clinical, not like sociopathic way. It's interesting. The character's quite interesting. It's like he's quite calm. He makes it clear he's quite cognizant of his wickedness and his evil, even though he doesn't come across as like insane or sociopathic. Like he apologizes for what he needs to do. Please accept my apology. For what?
I can just hear the crunching. That's what, because I can just hear the crunching in the picture. Yeah. I'm like, oh, stop.
Yeah, and he makes it clear that that's just step one of proving the matter to him, as he then proceeds to pull out an envelope containing files and photos of his mother, his daughter, his brother, and his brother's wife, their children, his ex-wife, all the info that just makes it clear that, if he doesn't give him what he wants, shit's going to come down. And that is the opening, the epilogue, the prologue to chapter one of Secret, Teeth with Which to Eat.
Oh,
and now the story that follows then is rather surprising in light of such a brutal opening, in which it is businessman sitting at a table and talking to each other for 18 pages, thereabouts. Robert Dunn comes to his lawyer to discuss what has happened. He's given him something we don't know. You know, this is a conspiracy book for starters. You know, they've not been free with a lot of info about it ahead of time, but it is a conspiracy book. So he's given him something earth shattering. But his lawyer has to step out and go to a meeting with their own internal security. The security firm that manages their company. And they're meeting with its representative, Grant Miller, who is here just to update them on the current situation. You know, that's about it. And then you know, get that out of the way, and he hands them another envelope. I got a legitimate laugh out of, you know. All the various board members think that he's going into an extended sales pitch, you know. And he says, no, just have this envelope here. And he hands them the envelope. And what's in there? My personal assessment of your firm's security. Have a look. It's a bit rough. I didn't hold back. And the guy opens the envelope, but it's just a single piece of paper that just says, it's shit.
I loved it. I love that.
Wow.
Yeah. The guy explains that the woman sitting to his left is a member of his company, and 2 weeks ago with tremendous ease, broke into their company, well, walked in is more like it, hacked her way through all the security systems, took some incredibly incriminating data on all the board members from their internal files, and it's not a case of blackmail or anything, it's just, we could do it. So could somebody else. So you know,
I liked her little line here about his password, though. That gave me a giggle too.
Yes, this is unbelievable.
Do you have anything to say to the FBI? You say you used to be FBI.
I was.
Well, then I'm sure you'll be aware of the crimes you've just committed. Do you have anything else you want to add before I call the police and the world comes crashing down around you?
Yes, Frisky Boy 15 isn't a password, Mr. Ames. It's a personality disorder.
I like that, though.
But they're simply pointing out that he's not. There's no blackmail involved. He doesn't want anything from them. He's just making the case that if they could come in and get all this info, it would be tremendously easy for somebody else to. So, you know, maybe indulge in the expanded services package. So there's a touch of blackmail. Grant Miller goes on then to meet with Robert Dunn, set up by the lawyer to talk about how to respond to this home invasion and the theft of the information. They make an arrangement, and Grant goes back to his office, and there's a guy named James, who he's not very fond of, has slept in his office that night, and spoilers, really, you know, I'll just drop them now, spoilers. Turns out James was the guy who broke into the guy's house, did it all on purpose, and gives Grant his tooth as a little memoir of the whole affair.
Yeah.
And peppered into the middle of that, then, there was a scene which is of what is presumably Grant's superiors at the Steadfast Security Corporation murdering somebody in England. We don't see any faces, but it seems quite likely, and he gives them a code word of some kind. So, that's the issue. In short, not a heck of a lot happening. The characters are laid out pretty thinly, and I gotta be honest, like, it didn't really grab me, this one. I gotta be honest. Now, I think part of that is my own fault, because I've read a couple of Jonathan Hickman things now at this stage, and when I read a summary, a blurb, an advert that talks about a dark secret and a conspiracy, and I see a spooky cover with a big close-up shot of
that is
teeth.
A spooky cover.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Big photostat of terror.
Comic cover. Yeah. You know,
and then you know, yeah. Well, the title is "Teeth with Which to Eat."
Yeah, and then they've got next week, you know, right there, missing is finger.
Next month has a missing, it's a big lot of body part. But I'm afraid my mind rather raced ahead to something fantastical.
I thought it's actually a pretty good setup. I mean, you know who the bad guys are, and you want to know what. I'm intrigued of what their overall purpose is.
So you're thinking it's a little too down to earth for Jonathan Hickman's what you're thinking.
For what I was for not just for Jonathan Hickman, I think maybe for me, the prologue, yeah. You know, grabbed my attention. It was quite rough and quite shocking, and I was like, oh, I'm interested in this now. And then it's followed up by like 16 pages of and I don't use this term derogatorily, but boardroom drama. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's fine. You know, that has its place. You know, Oscars have been won with boardroom drama. But I just really wasn't what I was expecting out of the issue. And it's like, oh, the unassuming woman really broke in and hacked all their systems and everything. You know, I've seen a million films where that happened. I don't, you know, I don't think you really get into, you don't get into the heads really of any of the characters in any particular way. The art's quite interesting because it's not full color, as it were. Everything is mm-hmm. monochrome, but it's not necessarily monochrome in black and white. It is it's like some panel, like the whole epilogue, for instance, is first page is entirely black and white, gray, except for the breaker, the intruder, who is cast entirely in red, you know, and the blood running down Don's face is red, or the tooth is entirely red, the light coming out of a lampshade is just entirely red in the dark room, even though like in the world of this comic, it's not a red light, it's the way it's colored, and then like the scene of Don meeting with his lawyer is entirely in green tones. The scene of Grant talking with the board members, it's almost entirely in like purples, like an off gray sort of bluey purple color, except for the panels where like something goes boom, something happens, and it's all in yellow tones, for instance. It's an interesting color palette, you know, I like it, but I just altogether I just didn't find the issue grab me the way it was hoping. I was hoping for it to grab me. You know, it's nice art, and if boardroom drama is your thing, like, you know, and I would say, you know, yes, go right ahead. I would recommend it to anybody who likes a bit of drama, like themed around that. But
I think most of it's going to happen in the next issue because now you know that these two guys are in it together.
Yeah, that's fair enough, but I already added two Image books to my pull list in the last month, so I'm going to need something more out of the first issue to convince me to add a third, you know?
What's it with the Image books and their ink coming off of my fingers?
Just checking my hands here, but thankfully that has not happened with this one.
It's done it for me, just like it did with the Manhattan Project. I'm like,
thankfully that's not.
It's coming off.
Okay, thank goodness that's not happening with Saga, because I do like this book.
Yeah.
You know?
No, this, you know, this is the thing. It is not by any stretch of the imagination a bad comic. Certainly not. Absolutely not. No. But I don't think it really fulfilled what I was expecting out of it. There's a lot of very standard, straightforward Washington potboiler, like, corporate drama going on here, and
you know what it's missing, don't you know? The ultimate nullifier in a box,
something like that. You know, yeah. Somebody just descending from space to kill someone.
That made Avengers better. Maybe that would make that book better. Just saying.
Somebody descending from fringe space, planning to assassinate someone with an idea. You know, something high concept like that would have perked this right up. No, I simply wasn't expecting a real world corporate espionage drama like this. When I read, it was Jonathan Hickman book, corporate secret, not even corporate, but like dark conspiracy secret. Perhaps my mind is my own worst enemy there, but it rather raced ahead to a very different conclusion than what I got from this. So, you know, if you like a little bit of Washington illegal paper slinging security, conspiracy, double crossing, backstabbing, corporate espionage type stories, it's Jonathan Hickman plus something you already like that. I would absolutely recommend it. I would say totally go for it. I'm afraid that unfortunately it hasn't hooked me, and I'm not sure if I'm going to come back for the second one or not.
It sounds like it's an AMC series in the making.
Oh, very much so. This is
like,
very
like this could like talented. Wind up as an AMC series at some point if it's like successful.
I mean, it may go off in some bonkers direction, whatever it is that this dumb guy has had stolen from him. Whether it's taken out of a computer, so presumably it's information rather than any kind of It's some secret that will bring the world down. But you know what? I find that I don't care about finding out. And really, you know, that's it, isn't it? You know.
Yeah.
But if that school of storytelling, you know, is if you like corporate. And that's just, it's never been particularly up my alley. You know, if you like government conspiracy stuff that has government, I like a government conspiracy if it's fringing on the fantastic or the supernatural or something like that. But this is probably like just like where he hides the dead hookers or something is probably as exciting.
Wow.
I'm sure it'll be something more interesting than that. But, you know, that's the sort of place this story leads my mind to going. And I just found that it didn't set my mind afire, but I'm not saying you shouldn't check it out if you're more open to that type of story than I am. So, secret.
I didn't mind it. I thought it was kind of intriguing because I want to know what these two are after, and what other like plots they're gonna be coming up with. So yeah, it's something that I like. So
cool.
I think it's just. I think I just would have wanted a little more out of a first issue. You know, it's like I had the whole of Manhattan Project's, you know, sketched in like three massive characters. And you get the larger than life general. You got Robert Eipener, and you got his evil twin brother, and it gives you your. There's a load of little high concept hooks that are like, oh, why is Albert Einstein in that cell contemplating that monolith? Oh, the Chinese and their death, you know, or the Japanese.
That comes out next week, doesn't it?
It does. I'm looking forward to the next issue of it, too. But this one, it was like, he stole a thing, and he killed a dude. It's all a little too real world, I think, for me, from what I was expecting from an Hickman comic. But
it's too real!
I'm not saying don't check it out, but don't be expecting Fantastic Four or Manhattan Project-style stuff, is maybe what I would say about it. So, yeah, that's Secret. Okay. Something a little different now this week. Something
cool. I want to give out two honorable mentions before we get to the last review of the show. That is going to be Fantastic Four.
Oh, yeah.
Which was very good.
Really good.
Won't talk about
my comic for the week.
Yeah, don't want to talk about it at all because it's really one of those things. I mean, we actually contemplated reviewing this, one of us or so, but I don't think that there's any way to do it. This is such an empathic issue. You really have to kind of experience it, and talking about it would just sort of ruin that.
So, it really depressed me when I read it.
I would read it something depressing.
Yeah. So anyway, just check it out. Seriously, even if you have not been reading anything, this is a perfect standalone issue.
Yeah, definitely.
So even if you haven't been reading it, you know, and you want to just check out a nice, cool little story, check that out. Also, Saga. Saga came out this week as well. This is the chapter
for
2.
For some people,
not everybody. This was also really good as well.
Oh, yeah.
It's got just, little bits of little interesting things, so really love it.
The Stalk.
We're just not
talking. Yeah, I'm totally keeping this book. I'm going to drop some books, but this is not one of the books I'm dropping.
Yeah, that's totally on my list.
Dude, the end of that, too. I'm not going to talk about the end of it.
Jesus, what the hell is happening? I'm looking at the last page.
You should buy this book just to see what's on the last page.
I know. It's really
As if there wasn't enough whacked out stuff already happening within the context of the issue alone, just like in terms of like design and just everything else that's going on in the issue. And that last page comes along and is like, what the hell?
So, in an abrupt sort of left turn for the show, we're going back to something we haven't really reviewed, I don't think, in a little while, or talked about too much, which is Batgirl. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
That Alone Gail Simone book.
Yeah, the Alone Gail Simone book at the right now. It's a book that's still sort of trying to find its place for me. I keep getting it, and I think it may have started to take that turn. I think this issue actually started to take the turn where it's like, oh, there's Gail. There she is.
It's the ending.
The ending is really great, but it's sort of like, I've been missing, you know, that sort of Secret Six Gail that was like, there was just that messed up element. And there were a few things that happened here and there, but this was really the first time, I think, in this run where I was sort of like, oh, there it is.
There's one panel in here that gets to me, and of course we'll talk about it when we get there. So,
So going on from the last issue, there's this, I guess, a collector of sorts, going by the name of Grotesque. He like killed a dude for a very particular bottle of wine. So it seems to be this person has like an obsessive collection compulsion where they have to have like the best of all of this stuff, and they have, you know, whatever means to get that. So it's not even like a it's just psychotic in that way.
And I sort of like the idea of, especially as a villain that, like, you know, she gets in a fight with him in the last issue.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And now, like, his collecting habits is like, I've got to have her.
Yeah.
And that's really creepy.
Yeah. Yeah, he wants her as well. He also has the ability. He's actually a meta. He actually can channel electricity, which is, you know, not good either. So he's not just a human. He's also got meta ability as well. They wear these sort of demonic masks, him and his team. Speaking of his crew, one of the people on the crew, Barbara actually recognizes as one of the men that was standing behind the Joker the night she was shot.
Now, I saw this at the end of the previous issue.
Yes.
Because I didn't read this. I didn't read this, listener.
Yeah. So that's what
I leafed it, so I know basically what happens.
So there's two thugs that she's fighting in this story. There's a little bit of a flashback talking about the moment. But she ends up sort of incapacitating the one guy. He has a name, and he's named in here Danny. Danny the Weasel.
But wouldn't you hate to be called the Weasel?
Wouldn't you? I know.
Danny the Weasel, I know. What are you talking about?
But the other thug,
what's his name, Cal? Remember the Weasel?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, crap. What's
his
name?
Oh, wow. It's all 90s. It's all 90s.
The ferret?
No,
the weasel. Oh,
you're thinking of...
What is it, Dino Man?
Yeah, I can't remember his name right now.
I know you're talking about now. That comedian that doesn't have a career anymore.
Yeah, he used to have a career. Anyway.
What you're talking about?
It's an American thing. You're okay.
Yeah.
Guess so. Yeah, okay.
but the other thug, she beats the holy snot out of. But yet, just as the dude is about to fall headfirst under the concrete in the sewer, she actually... Polly Shore, thank you. Yes.
Jesus. Okay.
She cradles his head and lays him down unconscious. So you still see this little bit where it's like, you know, it's a little bit of reservation about causing head injuries and things.
Yeah.
On Barbara's part, but she has a brief.
I thought that was really sweet.
A brief conversation with Danny in which she basically tells him to run and get the hell out. Which she's a bit shocked by why she does that, but I think she's even shocked as well.
Yeah.
Well,
she's even like, what did I do?
Why did I do that? Yeah.
What have I done?
So she goes
home. She beats herself up over that. She's like, oh, crap.
Yeah, she's not really sure why she did that. I think it makes sense later, but but she goes home, and she sees the box again that her mother had gave her as a gift, but she hadn't opened yet. And she also thinks back to what Black Canary had said, which was, that, you know, Barbara should be glad that her mother's back. You know, Barbara's been struggling with her mother returning. And, you know, Black Canary's like, look, you got a second chance. Not everybody gets that opportunity. You know, you should feel fortunate that you at least have a chance to rebuild something. And she opens the box, and it's a locket that had belonged to her grandmother that I guess even had her teeth markets on it, I think she said. Her baby teeth.
Yeah, something about teeth.
Her baby teeth had chewed on it at one point. So... So she decides to call her mom and to meet up with her. And so in another scene, we see Grotesque talking to Danny. And again, it's this, you know, about wanting to basically possess Batgirl. A little creepy. But this is where it starts to sort of get interesting, because Barbara sort of finally has the balls to actually say, you know, look, why did you leave? You know, what's the deal? And her mother explains that it was after this event where James had the son.
I thought this was pretty hokey, by the way.
It's a little hokey.
It was my problem with the issue, because this excuse for why she left.
We'll get there. Hang on.
Go ahead.
So he's like, he tells his mom that there's a present for her in the yard. And when she goes out to the yard, all he's holding is the sort of empty cat collar. And he obviously has killed this cat in a very horrible way, the family cat. And he, in a very sort of sociopathic, you know, psychotic way, for even someone of his age, which is like 8 or 10, very plainly explains to her that it's her fault. That, you know, she is why he had to kill this cat. There's a great panel, too, when he's actually telling her where it's like broken glass. You know, sort of the mind shattering. And in a very codependent sort of way, the mom believes him. And that's why she leaves.
Now, James Jr. being a killer, psychopath, whatever, that's an established thing now, I'm pretty sure.
Correct.
That's from Scott Snyder's Detective Comics.
Yeah, and that's what
I think it goes back to before that, though.
I don't know if it was before that, but like his last story was specifically about that.
That's where I heard
about it, but prior to that, I had no knowledge of it. You know, I didn't know if this was a thing or not.
I'm going to go look that up while you talk.
So that's not the hokey thing. Like him being like this crazy child killer thing is not what. But what I thought was hokey is that. Why didn't she just get the kid help?
That's what Barbara says. Even Barbara's like, "Well, why didn't you get him help? Why didn't you take him to a psychiatrist?"
And he threatens to do something to Barbara if she did something.
Yeah, and Barbara even says here that she's not getting the whole story. There's something else. So
it'd be like Dane threatened to kill her or something else.
Yeah, I don't know. There's something else going on. So we're getting part of the picture, but we're not getting all of it. And especially this is a good thing for newer audiences to this, because just like me, they may not be aware of all the stuff that happened with James. I mean, we got to remember that, part of this whole deal is reintroducing people, to these characters and some of the more complicated backstory.
I was really surprised that showed up in Batgirl too, because I know in the back of my head that all the Batman stuff happened, all that stuff is part of the new DC, but when stuff like that shows up, it still kind of surprises me, because I was like, wow, they're really going back to this.
Yeah.
It just kind
of... I've just looked it up. It actually was a product of Scott Snyder's Batman. There you go. Holy crap. I thought that was a thing that happened before.
See, because I made the mistake when the books were ending and everything was relaunching, I made the mistake of reading the last issue of Detective Comics before reading the beginning of that story.
And there's kind of an interesting deal for Barbara, too, because one, she doesn't believe that her mom's telling her the whole story. Second of all, she's a bit distraught, because if her mom did know that ahead of time, well, geez, I mean, what would have happened if they would have gotten him help, when he was younger or something? So I think it kind of goes back into that blame element, blaming her mom as well. But she dons the Batgirl costume to go back out again. she managed to track down Grotesque because we see these elements of her still, being very savvy. I mean, still having like these sort of Oracle skills. I mean, obviously she's not going to lose those.
She tracked down Danny,
and she figured that...
Yeah, she don't care about Grotesque, she's going after that guy. She's like got the reckoning, she's got to finish something.
But so she tracks down Danny, and Danny is... And Grotesque has already figured out that Batgirl is going to be there.
Yeah, she's more interested in that guy than she is Grotesque, which, is different. Grotesque is like, I want Batgirl, so I'm going to keep this guy around. Going to draw her too.
Yeah, because he doesn't really care for Danny either.
Yeah, he don't care. He even says, you're worthless at one point in the issue.
Yeah, you're pretty... Yeah, exactly. so the next fight sequence in this ensues, where she doesn't do very well against Grotesque at first. I mean, she gets a few good punches in. But then he, channels lightning. And in a bit of a turn, Danny actually pulls a gun on Grotesque and misses, of course. So Grotesque turns around and basically gives him a full bolt of lightning, which gives Barbara the opening that she needs. And an interesting sequence, because she just beats the dog shit out of Grotesque. And she even mentions about Batman, why he stays detached, because otherwise, this happens.
She says he doesn't want to end up like what I have become right now.
Yeah.
You know?
Where
that's the panel I was talking about. I really like that panel.
But she sums it up well, because he kept talking about wanting her, and she's like, "I hate you, I reject you," and then that final sequence is he's sort of laying unconscious in the rain, you know, with her in mostly silhouette, mm-hmm. saying, "I reject you."
Yeah.
Oof. So, so we get these final moments with Danny, because his wounds are mortal. And she mentions within the sequence that she wants to know from him basically one specific thing, which is that the night that she was shot, someone called the police and called an ambulance. And of all people, it was Danny. And she wanted to know why. And he basically, you know, sums it up by saying that, you know, even though she had been shot and was laying there, she didn't cry, she didn't beg for mercy, she didn't plead, you know, that, you know, she was strong, and he just couldn't stand to, you know, to leave her like that, and then he dies.
It's kind of an interesting wrinkle to the story, because, you know, going back and reading, like, The Killing Joke, which I haven't in a long time, I don't think it ever actually says, like, you know, why, you know, she got shot. Why didn't she bleed to death? You know, who got to her in time? And I think that's kind of a neat retcon and wrinkle there, mm-hmm. and it kind of adds another layer to that. And I thought that part was pretty good. I liked that.
But no, hang on. Doesn't this issue sort of imply that Gordon then came home to find her?
That's what they were wanting.
Gordon was there in The Killing Joke.
Gordon came home, but remember, Joker kidnapped him.
But wasn't he already there in the apartment in The Killing Joke?
He was. He was, like, already there in the apartment in The Killing Joke. And she gets up and she goes, answers the door. She gets shot, and then she falls, you know, through, like, this glass table, and then they, like, knock out Gordon or something. And then, like, the last thing you see is, you know, Joker doing some bad stuff to
take
her.
Photos. Okay, just, you know, so I guess it's a bit of revisionism, but whatever. Okay.
Well, I mean, like I said, if Gordon was unconscious or they, you know, whatever, so. But
it's not like Joker was, like, the only guy there. I mean, there were some dudes that were.
Oh, yeah.
This guy probably was, you know, the exact replica of that one of those guys standing behind him, but I don't know. But, I mean, that happened. You know, that was definitely somebody else with him, some hench guys.
But there's a bit of an epilogue to this as well. I would call it a sort of epilogue to the story, where her roommate is finishing up her shift at the bar that she works at, and her manager, I guess, tries to have one of the guys walk her home, which she declines. And as soon as she walks out the door, there's someone at the door, and strikes up a conversation with her and starts following her and asking her, you know, to go out with him or whatever. And at first she sort of declines, and then eventually he sort of sweet talks her a bit and convinces her to let him walk with her. And she introduces herself. I'm, you know, Lysia? I'm sorry, by the way. What's your name? And he's like, oh, yeah, I'm nice to meet you. I'm James.
Oh, shit!
Done. And the next issue is The Night of the Owls, so.
Yep.
Yeah, so interesting. I think I, you know, like I said, I think we're getting into that range of, you know, maybe we're getting into some more of the intriguing human messed up stories that I've come to love from Gail Simone. So
that sounds
It was a pretty good issue, except for, like I said, that one part just I think was just really hokey.
But it's not hokey in the sense that, I mean, I understand what you're saying. But I think that it's already been spoken to. I think, you know, Barbara's pointing out that this is not the whole story.
The story is, like, completely different or something, like, it's like, oh, yeah, I'm just a habitual liar, you know, then maybe I'll be okay with it.
Well, I think that there's elements of that story that are true, but there's something else.
Yeah.
You know, there's some bit of that story that's been left out, and there's something else going on that she's not saying. So I think that's the things that'll, you know, the threads that are being, you know, sort of set out that will come into fruition later. But I liked it. I liked this issue a lot. I had been thinking about dropping Batgirl, and I'm rethinking that with this issue. So
I did. Yeah, I had caught the cliffhanger of the previous issue, and I wanted to take a moment to look at this one, as it seemed fairly interesting, and bringing James Jr. into it that's definitely interesting. Also, seems like there's finally there's a point to the roommate, so that's good. You know, because mm-hmm. she really just seemed to
I think they're moving forward with it pretty good, and I think there's a reason to keep it. So I'm not dropping. I mean, I have thought about the lulls in like a couple of the previous issues. I still haven't gotten over the Nightwing issue that was pointless.
Well, and you know, I don't know. Is that editorial? You know how much? You know, we talk about that in this early run of 52. Where
I don't know if it's like I just don't want to drop it because it's the only Gail Simone book I'm getting, or what it is. You know, because I do like Batgirl. I mean, like I know McFeely said something like he doesn't give a fig about you. Know, Batgirl, but yeah, I don't give a fig about her,
but I haven't find. I mean, this issue really was the first one that seemed to give me any reason to care about Barbara.
I don't know. I like the whole mirror story.
I still don't find that the series has provided me with an explanation for why Barbara should be Batgirl, what she brings to the role of Batgirl.
There isn't.
On the other characters couldn't, but
I
was worried that a lot in order to tell Barbara's stories, they would have to trade entirely on the PT the P the P, PDS. This would actually then, you know, the idea of actually, you know, bringing James Jr. in and working from that angle, work from stories that, you know, grow out of the character's past instead of a kind of an artificial situation that they had to cure in order to even give her PDS in the first place so that it could be part of the story. You know, they had to get her walking again in order to give her the post-traumatic stress so that they could tell stories about it, you know.
There isn't a logical reason for her to be Batgirl other than it's the Batgirl that I'm familiar with.
I had no desire
to buy the book when like it was Cassandra Cain or whatever, and then I had a little bit of desire to buy it when it was Spoiler because I like Spoiler, but I didn't buy it, and you know now it's Barbara, and I know who Barbara is, so that's kind of my pull. Then hey, it's Gail Simone.
I think my point is that I would have bought this book if it was still Gail Simone and it was, you know, Cassandra Cain or something else, you know.
I would have gotten it if it was them. Just like the Gail Simone thing would have got me, but I think it gets me a little bit more because it's Barbara, you know.
Yeah.
Just because, like, I don't know, it just is.
Yeah, I mean, it's one, and we've talked this point to death, you know, in other episodes. But I think, you know, we can mention again that, you know, this was obviously an editorial choice. This was not something that was done because it was going to be, you know, that there was necessarily a compelling story to tell. This was something that editorial decided that they wanted Barbara to be Batgirl for that iconic connection. So, you know,
and I knew if it was Cassandra Cain, Brian would be like knocking himself over getting to the comic shop. Absolutely loved that character, and he bought Batgirl forever when she was the Batgirl.
Yeah.
So.
But anyway, it's interesting. I mean, this would probably be a good time to jump on if you're wanting to get in.
I'm
of course,
liking it.
Especially with the Owl story now coming in, you know, crossing over to a couple of the Bat books. So,
how many books I'm excited about? I don't want to buy a bunch of those Bat books.
I'm not. I mean, I'm reading Batman. I'm going to read. I'm keeping this, and I don't think it's crossing over with Batwoman. I don't think so.
I don't think so. No, it doesn't seem like there's room for it at the moment.
Yeah. So, cool. All right. Well, anything else we want to mention before we mosey on out of here?
Just do one quick check and make sure nothing's come out of C2E2.
Rob, as he says, in honor of the upcoming 100th episode of Fanboy Versus, I'll be tweeting the rules for the Fanboy Versus drinking game.
Ooh.
Oh.
I'm excited. Can I join in?
I'm a little worried.
He just barely tweeted that like 5 minutes ago.
Every time you mention Hand Ninja, take a drink.
That sounds really interesting.
Every time you mention something from the 90s.
Yeah, get us that. We'll make sure we distribute
it. Sure. I can't believe you couldn't figure that name out between the
God,
four.
God, well, if you get,
I don't even
you
know.
Write
I
a,
never saw that movie that you named. So.
You write a drinking game. We'll make sure we distribute it through all the TF Radio channels and everything. So that'll be awesome. So cool.
Anytime we say that bitches love Gambit. Take a drink.
Yeah, right.
I really missed an opportunity when you said Belladonna to say there's a bitch who loves Gambit. But I just said it now. So
there you go.
I got it.
You made up for it.
Yeah, so. I put it in. I thought it was pretty smooth. You wouldn't have noticed.
No. So this is 98. This is episode 98. So we will be here Next week, we will be Nicole-less,
yeah, I'm going finally to my special effects class, so.
Childhood.
Very interested in seeing how that works out, so.
Yeah, I'm so excited. I'm so excited to ask, you know, Ray some inside questions about the show and stuff.
Sweet. So. So you'll be out next week, but we will be here, and then there will be no new episode next week, and then the next episode will be our 100th, so big, big stuff. We'll have Avengers that week. is already
we,
out.
So we'll have the Avengers for our 100th episode.
That, yeah, that, we'll have
that's
Avengers.
Pretty good, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a good 100th more episode. Importantly, we'll have turtles.
We yeah. will have turtles.
Okay.
Yeah. No ninja.
But,
no ninja.
But,
no ninja hands.
Okay, that's a 90s. Take a drink.
Right. We've talked about the 90s. Please take a drink.
Well, need I remind you that I see the Avengers in less than 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But
quiet.
Okay, because we don't have a show that week, so it all balances out. It's cosmic.
Yeah, well, ours is May 4th, so...
April 26th.
So it's just a week before.
Man,
it's
that's
not
crazy.
Really, like... crazy head.
I couldn't hear what you were saying, McFeely, of all the awesomeness coming out of your mouth.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
So, like, when you see it and Giant Man and the Wasp show up, please don't put it on Twitter.
Yeah, really.
Because I want to be pleasantly surprised.
No, what you should
Nathan
do.
Fillion's Giant Man, okay?
What would be funny is if you did fake spoiler tweets about.
God, yeah, you should
that
totally
would be
do
funny.
That. Dude, I can't believe the Kree just blew up New York. What the
oh, no,
that doesn't seem that unlikely.
No, it doesn't seem that unlikely. You gotta do. You gotta
I
do.
Believe that.
You gotta reference like obscure characters.
What you should do is start mentioning DC characters showing up.
Where's Batman in this?
God. Holy crap, Batman!
Oh man, awesome. Well, cool.
And wonder what today's the day.
So.
Word is apparently that like after the preview screenings, like that whatever Loki's army is out there now. Like spoilers,
yeah,
I'm trying to avoid them.
Yeah, I haven't seen her.
I think I got spoiled though, but I think I got spoiled.
Yeah,
Did anybody get to see that, by the way?
No. Well, no one at all. I mean,
well,
anybody.
No, I mean, you know, we get the Avengers early. You guys get that before.
Oh, goody.
We'll survive. You know.
Oh, God. All right. Well, we better get out of here before we...
Justice. I did see Battleship this week.
Though. Oh, when? Wow. That's...
I want to see Battleship.
Fun. It was tons of fun.
Well, as long as it's fun.
Did somebody say, I sank your battleship in it?
No.
What? That's a crime. Even Transformers slid in more than meets the eye. I mean, come on.
I know, but this did slide in.
People. Just like put a cuss word in there somewhere. I'm not saying it. Sorry, I'm not doing it.
I mean, they could have at least had one of the Navy guys be like, hey, you sank our battleship.
Well, the whole trick is we don't have battleships anymore. So, you know, there's a whole... They can't sink it because it's...
So, wait a minute. Whoa.
I'm not going to give a little spoiler or anything.
So, the movie is called Battleship, and there
there's a battleship in it, but I can't go into it. I'll spoil it. I'll say nothing.
Oh, yes, like, you'll spoil us.
Hey, it's not bad, you know. It's pretty fun.
Okay. D2. That's how the movie's resolved, right?
They don't say you sank my battleship, but there is an extended scene where they shout letter and number coordinates and bellow hit and miss at each other. Yes.
Okay. Well, that's fair enough. You know, I'll settle for that.
I didn't realize, but you know, the bloke that the star of this movie is the guy that played Gambit in Wolverine Origins.
Ah, sweet.
Bitches love Gambit, so there's another.
I mean, there is no escape.
This bitch loves Liam Neeson. I'll see anything with him in it.
Oh, wow. Liam Neeson doesn't even do that much in it, you know.
I don't care. That's the only reason why I want to see Wrath of the Titans, because I know he's in it for 5 minutes.
Well, Liam Neeson, I did really want to see Liam Neeson standing on the bow of a ship as it went down, shaking his fist in the air and bellowing, "You're sunk, battleship!"
Yes! I would have awesome. Watched that movie.
You know, that's strange. He's doing his best American accent, you know, and that's terribly strange. It's that odd Liam Neeson accent that doesn't quite sound American.
For some reason, he's punching a wolf while the battleship.
Oh my god! I haven't seen that film, but like, I want to go. I want to see it because, like, I didn't see that film. I don't know how it ended, but I just really wanted to go and see The Grey on the basis that I hoped it would have Liam Neeson like just bare knuckle boxing a wolf.
Wow.
I need to catch that one.
Oh, well,
we may have ripped it off top.
On that note, I think we'll leave for this week. So, again, go to the website, fanboyversus.com. Follow us on Twitter, at fanboyvs. We also have our own Twitter feeds. You can check those out as well. You can link to all of those through the TF Radio website, so tfradio.net. You can get links to all of our Twitter feeds as well. Don't forget you can join us live too. We haven't mentioned we do the show live, we don't mention always when, but that's 4 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. GMT time.
That's right.
Yeah, see. I know people all over the world and I have like the world clock in my phone. I feel very connected. so I know these things. Anyway,
you got to be careful with those Arizona people.
I have Arizona as a separate time on my phone so that I don't get screwed up by my friends in Arizona who are bastards and don't observe daylight savings
Amy.
Time. Yeah, Amy. So, anyway, so there you go. Great show. Thank you, crew. Appreciate it. I want to thank everybody that listened live. I don't think we interacted very much with the live, but anyway, sorry. We'll do that next week. Especially for the 100th episode. We're going to blow that mother out.
Something.
Or at least it'll be like a regular episode. But hopefully there will be more to it. Especially tune in to RFC because we're getting ready for BotCon, of course. So if you're gearing up for BotCon, check out the show. We're talking a lot about BotCon. So anyway, all right, that's it. That's it. We're done.
Bye-bye.
Adios. So thanks so much for tuning in, and please tune in next time when it'll be Fanboy versus...
This has been Fanboy versus... Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at TF Radio for news and updates. Like the podcast? Leave us feedback on iTunes. Copyright 2011, Radio Free Cybertron.